B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper.
And Murray.
Gasper.
And Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper.
And Murray.
Gasper.
And Murray.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Just want to touch on something quickly here as Chris. This is like the witching hour of Gasper Murray now, because this is where Chris is like, I get like 20% Chris because college football's on. So it's a lot of like awkward pauses of me stopping, trying to pass the proverbial ball to Chris. Huh? Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, because I'm busy watching Oklahoma State Tulsa. But Chris, if you don't know, you don't listen with any regularity, Chris is like, it's college football, precipitous drop off, everything else. Like, Chris really cares about college football. And
this
I respect that.
Yeah.
Because my care level like drops by the day for like pretty much, well, everything. I give you credit there, pal, and you're excited that college football is back, and that's why I wanted to get your thoughts on the Big Ten announcing, hey, you know what, they reverse course this week and say, now we got to make that money. The people need the college football. We're coming back the end of October, which I have no problem with, and I can understand why some people, especially if you're a parent of a child at one of those schools, a young adult, that they don't have the access to the kind of COVID testing that these players do. But, hey, that's the way the world works. Sucks, but it is what it is. You happy the Big Ten's back? Because, boy, some people are real hot about it.
I am happy they're back. So, normally, I'm a completely rational person, particularly when it comes to COVID.
This is the other reason I love that you love college football this much.
Yeah, I mean, you see me, I think sometimes people can see me on Felger and Maz. You see I come in with gloves and a mask, and I'm, like, wiping down. And, yeah, the one thing where I'm kind of like the, you know, some of the people that don't take COVID as seriously as college football. I'm like, I need my fix. Let's make it happen. We got this daily testing. That's pretty good. Close enough. You know, no one's in like real, you know, health danger. I understand there is real health danger of COVID. I'm just telling you, I need my college football fix. So I am thrilled that the Big Ten is playing. I think they've actually come up with a halfway decent plan in terms of doing the daily COVID testing and what the standards are for making sure teams can take the field and play. And I'm very glad that they're going to do, you know, I'm not a doctor or anything, so if I get any of these terms wrong, but they're going to do the EKGs and all the heart monitoring to make sure that myocarditis isn't a major issue. And if they find myocarditis, they can pull somebody out and make sure they're not at risk. But yeah, I got to be honest, like, you know, I know there are people like, oh, we got to open the restaurants or push through with the economy or do this and do that. You know, those people in the beginning of the pandemic. And I was like, no, you're wrong. Change everything they're talking about, restaurants, economy, freedom. Change the word to college football, and I am in 100% agreement. I'm like, this needs to happen. I don't care what it takes. Let's get these games. Let's get out in the field. I need these games. I need it.
So, again, I get the pushback, and social media is a sewer. But where I do get my backup, so I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, and you apparently didn't see it, but Christine Brennan, longtime reporter, wrote this column on USA Today, where this is where it's like, oh, boy, this is further proof everyone's lost their minds during this, the craziest time, at least in my lifetime. And the dumbest time to be alive ever. Christine Brennan called this literally, this is what she used in her column, the darkest day in Big Ten history. The Big Ten reverse course, they're going to be back at the end of October. They're just going to be playing football games. The darkest day in Big Ten history. And you don't need to read the column, Chris, because this is why it made me crazy, like other people. The darkest day in Big Ten history. Did her piece mention Larry Nassar or...
Great point.
Did it mention Jerry Sandusky?
Great point, too.
It did not. So the darkest day in Big Ten history. Like, hey, again, like, especially if you're a parent of one of these children, young adult, I don't know why I keep saying children, that go to one of these schools. I get your concern and why you feel it's unfair and why you get pissed off about it. But I don't know. As a columnist, like, there's more horrible things that have happened this time, like the way it's always been, and I opened the show talking about this documentary that I watched last night about the Space Shuttle Challenger tragedy. Can't recommend it enough on Netflix. The one thing that will always be the most important, for better or worse, oftentimes it's worse, in America is the dollar. Like, the Challenger thing was the same thing. Like, hey, we had to get that Challenger up there, put that thing in the sky. We can't care about that O-ring. To fix the O-ring and actually do tests on it, nah, that would cost us more money. Money is the most important thing. That's why the Big Ten's back. That's why all these businesses keep going. Yeah. And so, I don't know. I think, like, fighting against it, writing a column like this, like, you're screaming into the void. And to say it's the darkest day in Big Ten history, it's just, well,
it's hyperbole.
And yeah, it's hyperbolic. You're being irrational. There's... everyone's lost their mind, Chris. Everyone's lost their mind.
Well, and the one thing I'll say, sorry to interrupt you, I'll just say quickly and let you go back to your screed. You know, you have to remember a lot of the players, including Justin Fields and Ohio State,
they want
to
be there.
They were advocating for the opportunity. And I also would say, just because you say you're going to play, and even if you start it, that doesn't mean you finish it. And we've seen that with all these sports leagues. You know, if there's an issue, if there's an outbreak, I don't think they're just going to push through, all joking aside, for me, come hell or high water. So just because you're going to attempt it, that doesn't mean that you're committed to finishing it no matter what.
Right. And so this was my bigger point, really, since day one of the hell pandemic that we're continuing to live through. Like, I think, you know, I get everyone that was scared back in March, and we had to go through all that. But at some point, no matter what the business was, I wanted, can we try? Can we try? That's all. And so I think the Big Ten is right to try. And if there's an unfortunate outbreak and that's how it ends up panning out, and that sucks, and, you know, you wish the best and you hope the best, but let's at least try it. Let's try. That's all. And now, Chris, you can go back to watching Louisiana, Georgia State here while I take some calls. Matt in Weymouth on the Celtics and Heat story. Jesus, go ahead, Matt.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how
So we're about 2 weeks away from kind of a big historic change in the NBA, where the Lakers are about to tie the Celtics for total titles. And I don't want the Lakers to beat Boston to get that. So that's why I'm rooting for Miami in the series.
Ooh, that is a dark take.
Huh.
That's very pessimistic all the way around.
Well, I'll tell you what, my friend, Matt, I don't know how much you watched or could stomach from Lakers-Nuggets game one of the Western Conference Finals last night. I think after like a quarter and a half that the Nuggets were up to like 20 fouls already. Like, this thing's being set up for the Lakers. The Nuggets have been a great story. I mean, what they've done is historic, coming back from two consecutive 3-1 series deficits to win their series and to get to this point. Murray, Jokic, they're a blast to watch.
What a fun team to watch.
They are. But they're not going to get the calls. They're not going to get past the Lakers. This thing's set up for the Lakers. And they're very talented, too, but... I don't know. Like, it might do well for TV ratings, maybe, if it's Lakers Celtics, or you do still get the LeBron Heat thing. I guess maybe that's what he's getting at. But I could only watch for so long last night, Chris. Like, this thing just feels so set up for LeBron and the Lakers to win this championship.
Yeah, but wouldn't you say then, don't you think the league would want Celtics-Lakers? So don't you, and I know there were four calls that went against Miami in game one of this series.
You get a good narrative there about the Heat, too. You know, LeBron getting revenge on Pat Riley.
Oh, okay. So you don't think it's the same?
No, I don't. I don't. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right, well, Chris can focus on Tulsa, Oklahoma State. When we go to break here, we return, we'll focus our attention, or I'll focus my attention back on Patriots, Seahawks coming up tomorrow night in Seattle. We'll continue to take your calls. You want to join us on anything with the Celtics. Again, I say series over, O-V-E-R or O-V-A-H, over. You disagree on that, have at it, 617-779-0985. More of your calls, and we'll get to the Pat Seahawks game next here on Casper and Murray.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Tune in tonight for the New England Volkswagen Dealer. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think as athletes, that's what we're used to. And don't get, I mean, any of us wrong. It's tough playing in Seattle, and I've only had to do it once in my career, but their fans are into it. They know when to yell. They understand the game of football. But I also think there's an element of just taking the field and having the energy in the stadium. And I think you probably ask both teams, home or away, in any stadium in the NFL, like, you just rather have fans there. It's tough going out there, and it's just, you know, no noise, no presence, just practice. You know, I think for all of us as players, we can't wait for, you know, the opportunity that hopefully someday this season we get, you know, some amount of fans in every stadium. But I just think it lifts the game, really makes the game better.
Patriot safety Devin McCourty talking about the lack of fans at games so far this season. Well, you had them in a few places. You had them in Kansas City. They had 6,000 in Cleveland the other night for Thursday night football, and the Browns went over the Bengals. And there was a fight, too. I don't know if you saw this, Chris.
So I heard about that, but I didn't see it. So there was a fight among Browns fans?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's just the best. Like, Cleveland just going to do Cleveland things, apparently. But the whole vibe of no fans, especially in a place like Seattle where the Patriots are playing tomorrow night, and what is still going to be a big game, that has to favor New England, right? Like, that place is, year in, year out, one of the more difficult places to play. Last time they played there, I mentioned it earlier, in 2012, it was my first time in that stadium for when the Pats ended up losing on the Sidney Rice touchdown to Seattle. It's like, that place was, like, they are up, they're into it every single down. Yeah, the 12s are corny, but they do care. So that place is going to be quiet, I mean, it's a neutral site game. It's just the Patriots had to do the pain-in-the-ass travel, and about the only thing they might have to deal with is the bad air condition because that part of the country is burning to the ground.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, certainly an advantage for the Patriots to not have to deal with that noise. But I think as we saw last week with some of the road games, you know, Dallas against the Rams as the Rams opened up SoFi Stadium.
That place looks awesome.
It does. The Buccaneers playing in the Superdome. You're still on the road, and even if there aren't fans, the other team is still comfortable in that environment, and it still is a little tougher than playing at home. So, you know, I think that's a situation where it's not the challenge it would normally be, especially for the Patriots in terms of having some younger players on the offensive side or some guys that aren't in a situation where they're as experienced, like Cam Newton, veteran player, but hasn't been on the Patriots long. And what's the communication with all this noise? I think it helps them. They don't have to deal with that. But still, you're playing, you know, Seattle at Seattle. That's not an easy game.
Do you like the Pats tomorrow night?
I do not. No, I like Seattle. I think it's going to be close.
So do I. I don't think they'll win, but I don't think they're going to get blown out.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get blown out. I mean, I see something sort of like 27-23, 27-24, where it's one of those Russell Wilson at the end drives that ends up winning it for the Seahawks.
But if the Patriots do pull it off, even if it's, you know, last second field goal from Nick Folk to win it, whatever.
That seems unlikely.
No, I know. Boy, he stinks. But if they do win it, you know, I do, Felger was talking about this week, I do agree that the national narrative changes.
100%.
And so now, are they a real contender, and should they make a, you know, or be looking into a deal for a wide receiver? We've heard Allen Robinson's name get kicked around this week because he's having a contract squabble with the Bears. Things could start, you know, being problematic for the Browns if they keep losing. Now, they won this week, but if they start going sideways, they're going to start looking at maybe trading Odell Beckham Jr. Should they be in the market for a wide receiver?
Yeah, they should be in the market for a wide receiver. I think regardless of whether they win this game or not, and I've said this consistently, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. You know, Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Cam Newton, they have their work cut out for them because there's not a lot of weapons there. And in week one, the Patriots were able to win because their number one weapon was Cam Newton's legs. That's not sustainable all season long with a 31-year-old quarterback. And with Julian Edelman being 34 and dealing with this knee injury, which sounds like it's going to have to be managed all year long, they need some more weapons there. I mean, I would love to see Odell Beckham Jr. I would love to see him here. He's always pined, to play for the Patriots. He's a Belichick guy. He's boys with Newton. And I think that they'd be getting him at a time when he's maybe been, I don't want to say humbled, but frustrated by playing for a team like the Browns. He's kind of seen the other side of the NFL, the fact that you can be on a team that not only does that team not compete for a championship, but it's kind of in a no man's land where people don't really care about you. So to come to a team like this, which is in a major media market, visible team, and can win, I think much like Randy Moss, when Moss got here in 2007, he would literally do whatever you asked.
Tom and Quincy on No Fans in the NFL. Go ahead. You're next here on Gaspar.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey,
what's going on?
What's happening? Hey, nothing. Hey, I was just kind of curious. You guys kind of just touched on it. I kind of caught the end because I'm working. But I'm curious on these teams that are kind of known for their home field. I think, you know, mostly I think they're like Kansas City and Seattle and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem to affect Kansas City necessarily. I mean, they had random, you know, I think it was like 16,000, something like that. It didn't seem to affect their play. I'm curious to see how Seattle plays out, because that's all you ever hear about since they moved into that that stadium is the 12th man thing. So the Pats having to go across country, to me, is like the biggest hurdle if you don't have to deal with the crowd noise and that element of that game. Do you think that these teams that are kind of known for their home field, like the Saints even, it's going to affect their play through the course of the season if the fans are still allowed to not show up? Or is it kind of just play by the seat of your pants every week?
I'd like to think it won't affect them all that much. And thanks for the call, Tom. I mean, you know, it's a weird adjustment. It was a weird adjustment for the NHL players up in Toronto and Edmonton, but they got used to it, and the same with the NBA players down in Orlando. And I'm sure the same thing with Major League Baseball players. Tom Brady said after the loss in New Orleans last week, Chris, that he, you know, essentially that it was weird. But look, these guys are used to playing in front of 70, 80, you know, close to 100,000 fans. It's going to be an adjustment, but I don't think it should affect them all that much.
Yeah, I don't think it should affect them that much either. It's interesting, though, just from a sort of, you know, macro viewpoint, what's interesting to me with these sports is clearly the indoor sports, because you're already indoors, it seems more intimate and you're okay without the fans. Whereas I feel like the outdoor sports, whether it's baseball, soccer, the NFL, it just sort of looks strange. Like something's missing, obviously, the fans. So I wonder if what I'm feeling as a viewer is something that's being felt by the players in some of these outdoor sports.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
It just feels more like cavernous. You know
it
mean?
Totally does. Yeah, I mean, it is jarring to watch, especially the NFL. My God, this is just so weird.
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, like the NBA now, I'm like, oh, I don't care if the fans ever come back. I kind of like the boards and the black
background. Their setup looks awesome.
I don't care. Like, I'm like, this is great. You know, I don't even notice or care that the fans aren't there.
No, me either. But yeah, in the NFL, I mean, watching that Pats game last week, I was like, God, this is so strange. Like, it's just... And so, you know, you'll probably... What you're not going to see are, you know, you're not going to get false starts because the crowds aren't causing them. You know, Mike mentioned, you know, so the Packers and Aaron Rodgers go into Minnesota, and Aaron Rodgers goes off last week. And he said, you know, I remember this too, Brett Favre could never win there. Like, no, the Packers consistently would go into Minnesota and play terribly, and it's off, you know, there's false starts, the quarterback's throwing terrible picks no matter whether it was Favre or Rodgers, whoever. You know, those kind of things go by the wayside. So you're getting more of an even playing field, and you're going to get probably a more high-scoring game.
Yeah.
So you just won't see procedural penalties and things like that. But I don't know. These guys will be able to compartmentalize, and it won't affect them as much, I think, after a few weeks.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Scott in the car on Cam Newton. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello.
Hey, Murray and Gasper. What happens if Cam Newton pukes in his shoes? You know, is 37-3, throw three picks. Is he crushed? Does he become a puddle?
No, I don't think so. And I don't think you're going to see finger pointing or excuse making and calling out the likes of N'Keal Harry, who looks like a bust. It's only week two. You know, he'll take his lumps, he'll say the right thing, and then he'll be back the next week against the Raiders, who they should, theoretically, beat here in Foxborough.
But I'm interested in that for this reason, because you've compared him to sort of the upbeat coworker in the honeymoon phase, and you know, what happens if they do get their brains beat in and it is a tough night for him and guys aren't open? Does he respond the same way, or is the honeymoon phase over? That doesn't mean he's ripping people, but, you know, is it just a little? I think that's what people are waiting to see, to be honest, in a lot of ways. How, as a leader, just we've talked so much about the Celtics and their response to adversity. How does Cam Newton respond to adversity as a leader? I think that there are some high profile examples that people always like to bring up of him not responding well, like Super Bowl 50. And, you know, I think if you talk to NFL people, they'll tell you by and large he has responded well to adversity throughout the course of his career. But that Super Bowl 50 situation, you know, situations where he gets into it with reporters and all that other stuff, that seems to be the stuff that resonates with the public. So I think people are waiting to see, you know, what happens when he's put in a situation after a loss. I would just point out that nobody behaves in a manner that is, you know, sort of less... I'm trying to choose the right word here. Less, I don't want to say civil, but less engaged or engaging after a loss than his coach. I mean, Belichick basically, after a loss, it's operation shutdown. It's we need to coach better. We need to play. It doesn't matter what you ask him or what's going on there. You know, he's just miserable after a loss and he gives you nothing.
Nick in Rhode Island on the Patriots. You're next here on Gasper and Marty. Hello.
Hi, guys. First things first, you have the best show on the airwaves. Every week you make me laugh, you teach me something, and my question's for Chris.
Yeah, sure.
After everything that's come out about that recent book, I rewatched the Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl, and they mentioned that, like, you know, Josh was supposed to be the Colts coach, and after everything we learned how, you know, Mr. Kraft went on the plane to get him off, so we all thought that was for a Brady buffer, but after, like, you know, Bill didn't help him get the job with the Giants... And, like, I know you had a bit about Brady having a chance to play for the Bears. Like, I know you have stuff that you can't necessarily say at the time. But, like, after everything that's happened, what was that all about?
The Josh McDaniels situation?
Yeah, like, was that to entice Brady not to leave after everything we know? And then, maybe their relationship soured, or what happened?
I think it was insurance if the Belichick-Brady relationship went so far south and so bad that Bill sort of walked away. Bill sort of felt like, hey, you know, you have this thing with Brady where I don't get to treat him like the other 52 guys on the roster, and I'm not going to accept that. You've made too many exceptions for him. So if that happened and Bill walked away, well, here's Josh McDaniels ready to take over. I think that was sort of insurance. You know, if Bill said, like, hey, you know what, you're meddling too much, like, I'm out of here.
Well, when did that, like, I'm not saying it's official, but, like, when did the Brady-Josh relationship kind of, like, get frayed?
Oh, yeah. And Nick, I'm going to let you go on that. Well, there was a certain Bills game.
That's true.
And that was 2017, right?
It was 2017.
Yeah, 2017. I would go back to that, Nick, where Tom Brady misses a wide-open Brandon Cooks, and he gets lit up by offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels, and then Brady lost his mind. And there's some people that would tell you, just speculation, that after that game, the quarterback was fined by a certain someone for yelling at the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that might have happened.
So I think that's maybe where it started to go sideways. And according to Jimmy Stewart, executive producer of Felger and Maz, yes, he also had heard that same thing about that fine, and that by the end of this thing last year, Brady couldn't wait to get the hell away from Josh McDaniels. So, you know, it was over the last couple of years where that thing really started to fall apart.
There are also people that would tell you that the Seth Wickersham story, there are people who feel like maybe members of the McDaniels family contributed to part of that story.
Oh. Huh. So, there you go. Was it Nick in Rhode Island? Thank you for the compliment, and hopefully you just learned a little bit more there as well. We'll be back. Got a couple of segments to go, including five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports. Want to touch on something LeBron James said after the Lakers win last night and why he continues to be the worst. That's next here on Gasper Murray.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub. Or go to insurekidsnow.gov. This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Not saying that, you know, the winner wasn't deserving of the MVP, but that pissed me off. And I finished second a lot in my career, either from a championship and now four times as an MVP. Like I said, I never came into this league saying, let me be an MVP or be a champion. I've always said, I just want to get better and better every single day. And those things take care of yourself. There's some things that are just out of my hand and some things you can't control, but it pissed me off.
The world.
Yeah, thank you very much there, John Ralphio. This guy, he makes it so hard, Chris. So LeBron and the Lakers win game one over the Nuggets last night in the Western Conference Finals. A million foul calls against the Nuggets, and it just feels like so dubious. But LeBron, after the game, seems a little, he's sad. That it was Giannis Antetokounmpo for the second straight year has won the MVP in the NBA, also named the Defensive Player of the Year. And so LeBron is sitting there, arms crossed. It pissed him off that he received only 16 first-place votes for MVP. Does he have a case here? Should he have won MVP this year? And I thought that this just came off so poor. And this is why people, I think, rightfully get on LeBron James, because it's just so, he's so me and me. It's about me and my, and I didn't get enough votes. And it's, oh God, he's going to be so insufferable, and he just doesn't get it. Like, is this really about what? You want to ultimately have more MVP awards than Michael Jordan? You still chasing that? Is that still a problem for you? Like, oh, God, that kind of me-first behavior, it's like, well, it's what's bothering me with the Celtics as they're imploding. This irked the hell out of me last night.
I think, look, here's the deal. The way he presented it probably was not the most artful way to present it, but I think he does have a case, and I think sometimes you can take greatness for granted. We've seen that in Major League Baseball with Barry Bonds. We saw it in the NBA with Michael Jordan, the year Karl Malone won. Like, sometimes you get to a point where there's just fatigue with greatness. And I think that was sort of LeBron's point. You know, he did have a very good year. I still would have given it to Giannis Antetokounmpo, but I was surprised at the gap in the voting. I thought it should have been closer than it was. And so I think LeBron has a point there. But we do tend to take greatness for granted. And that sort of part, like, I go back and look at this. Like, think about this fact. Kobe Bryant, who was a great, great player, regardless of what you think of him, he was a great player. He only won one MVP. How many MVPs did Steve Nash win?
Was it two? Yeah.
Yeah. So when you look at that, it's like, look, I love Steve Nash. Steve Nash was a fun, fun player to watch. But was Steve Nash a better player than Kobe Bryant? No. And I think history will look back and be like, how did Steve Nash win two MVPs and Kobe won one? It just doesn't make sense. So I think, again, there can sort of be voter fatigue when it comes to greatness, or you can sort of take greatness for granted, or you get caught up in a style of play of a team. I think that definitely happened with Nash and those Suns. And you know, Giannis deserved to win last year. I think he probably deserved to win this year. It looks a little different now after the Bucks got eliminated in the second round of the playoffs and he got hurt and he sort of has come up small the last 2 years in the playoffs. But I do think LeBron has a point, and his point is maybe like, look at what I did at age 35, the season I had. Look at my supporting cast other than Anthony Davis. And I guess you could throw, I like Kuzma. It's not that great. Look what I'm doing. Why is this not appreciated?
Well, yeah. So he cites his age, 35, year 17. Kobe passes away. So you're going to get, like, you're getting votes because of that narrative, dude. Like, because you're older and people are going to, like, I think there's almost the sympathy vote because Kobe died tragically back in February. Like, I don't know. I think Giannis should have won it. It shouldn't have been a landslide. LeBron should have got votes, but I don't know. The 16 or 17 votes that you got, like, I think you got him because of the narrative, because of your age, because you're in year 17. Like, it just bothers me.
No, I can tell, and I understand where you're coming from, but I think we're basically saying the same thing, just from different sides, which is we both agree that the voting should have been closer, and I think that's what ticked him off, was that the voting, he took it as sort of like disrespect, like, wow, you guys don't really even appreciate what I'm doing to make this a closer vote. It's like you just sort of predetermined Giannis was the MVP, like, no matter what. Like, what has Giannis won?
Yeah, I guess that's,
you know, it's the whole thing. It's like, it's kind of like, you know, like supermodels. It's like, oh, I've been the best supermodel forever, and now like this flavor of the month comes along, and you're gonna, you know, this new Jenner comes along, and now I'm off the covers. Like, what's up with that?
Well, we are a fickle society, I suppose. Yeah. Scott in South Boston on the Celtics. Go ahead. You're next here on Gasper Murray.
Can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, real quick. So first off, I second what that other caller said. I don't know if you guys have realized it. I don't know if it's something if it's touchy to say, but you guys are phenomenal. I always call into Felger and Maz because I reach a boiling point and have to make a point usually about hockey. But with you guys, it's always a question. You guys always make me learn, so I just want to give you props for that.
Hey, thanks. Appreciate
my
that.
Quick question. You got both for both of you. You guys are unbelievable. You should have a day show. But anyway, I don't know if it's. You're too big time though now, Casper. But
no.
My question is just okay. Murray, you're talking about too many fouls in the game last night with LA.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to. Like I told you, I'm a hockey fan. I've been trying to get into the NBA and watch the Celtics. Casper, again, I think you might be a little bit too into the NBA to answer this.
Okay.
But how come when there's a foul, I feel like my eyes are lying to me. Like I see. Like, the other team travel, and they don't call it, and then they call phantom fouls, and, like, the refs, and then the announcers drive me nuts because they never call out what is actually being seen on the game or slow motion like they do in the NHL, for instance, and actually put checks and balances with the refs. So I'll hang up and let you guys.
Well, yeah. Scott, just quickly, he hung up because I want to know his age, because if you're of a certain age, I think in your, you know, mid to late 30s and beyond that, like my, you know, Gen X, like Chris and I.
I'm not Gen X.
And you mostly had watched hockey, and now you're giving the NBA a little bit more time. And because you're so sports starved, you are now watching a lot of these NBA playoffs and not just the Celtics. And you watch some of the fouls that they call, and you remember what it used to be like, especially when dudes were, like, getting mugged in the late 90s.
Oh,
and
that Pat Riley was desecrating the NBA, desecrating basketball?
That got way out of control. But if you grew up watching some hoops in the 80s and 90s and, like, in its heyday, and now you watch it now, you're like, well, he barely touched them. That's not a foul. Why'd they call a foul? And why are they calling that a Euro step when that's a travel? Like, it's way different, dude. So that's, I mean, it's kind of a silly answer maybe, but it's just so different now. Like what you used to see as a foul is, well, I mean, maybe you would get thrown out of the league if you tried to like clothesline someone now or anything like that, like Kurt Rambis. Now it's ticky-tack fouls. You get them out on the perimeter for just basically breathing on a guy, or if your foot's in the way and they land on you, like it's ridiculous. It's gotten way out of control, and I can understand for someone like Scott, Chris, if you don't really pay that much attention to the NBA and now you got into it, I can understand why people are like, I can't watch this. Like, this is why are they calling these fouls? Why is everyone traveling? This product kind of sucks.
I do think they could do more with the traveling phantom foul calls, I think, have always been part of the NBA. If you go back and read Bob Ryan from 1968 on, you'll find him railing about a referee. It's Tommy Heinsohn railing about referees. You know, phantom foul calls have always been part, I think, of the NBA, unfortunately. I think that the traveling has gotten out of hand. Like, I was it smart in one of the games? I can't even remember which game it was now, but I feel like there have been three games the Celtics lost where their three-point attempt at the end, I'm like, that's a clear travel before the guy even got the shot off. And I will say that I think on 40% of Jason Tatum's step-back threes, I feel like he travels. He shuffles two steps to the side to release the ball and, like, changes pivot feet. So, yeah, traveling is a problem. I would like to see the – like, I like the Euro step. I like if a guy's kind of, like, has momentum and in motion and he's going forward. I don't mind them giving them leeway on that. I used to joke it was the Scottie Pippen grip the ball so I can dunk this step that they allowed. So if you're going forward, I'm generally okay with it. But if you're stationary and you switch pivot feet or you're doing, like, a step back sidestep thing and you're shuffling, they got to start calling that. Like, those need to be called travel. That's what they are.
There was one in particular in game one. And credit to Doris Burke, who got all over. It was Jay Crowder. I thought it was a three. It was a long two. Foul on Kemba Walker. He barely touched him. Jay Crowder acted like he had been shot by a rifle and went down. And Doris Burke immediately got on him. Like, she's like, you can't call that. And the league needs to change that. And she mentioned that even Steve Kerr, head coach of the Golden State Warriors, had spoke to the league and was like, yeah, we got to dial this back, guys. Like, it's getting out of control.
Yeah, diving is a problem. And I call it the Mike Krzyzewski-ization of basketball, which is like, instead of me playing defense and trying to stay in front of you for 24 or 30 seconds in college basketball, if you come anywhere near me, I'm just going to snap my head back and say it's a charge. And I find it offensive, to be honest. And I think that the NBA, what they should start doing is guys who dive and they have the video review, if they do a video review and it's clear that a guy flopped or
find
dove,
him.
Not only should they find him, they should charge him. It should be a personal foul. So in other words, you were trying to draw a cheap personal foul. Oh, you flopped? You flopped on this play, Marcus Smart? Oh, now that's a personal foul on you. Because guys will stop doing it then. If they feel like, oh, they could have a personal foul assigned to them. That's what I would do.
Bill in the car on the Celtics Heat Eastern Conference Final. Go ahead, Bill.
Guys, how are you?
Good, what's up?
Good.
I got to tell you, I'm surprised you didn't call that guy out who said he's going to be disappointed to see the Lakers pass the Celtics this year. The Lakers are a series behind the Celtics. Celtics have 17. Lakers have 16.
Did he say pass or tie? I thought he said tie. Which one did he say?
I thought he said they'll pass the Celtics this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In my head, it was just automatically like tie. Like, I know they can tie. Also, what I really wanted to say was, like, that doesn't count. The Lakers, all those. First of all, if you've ever been to Staples Center, they jam all the Minneapolis Lakers guys
stupid.
On, like, one banner. While Chick Hearn, who was a brilliant announcer, don't get me wrong, but Chick Hearn, an announcer, gets his own banner, but George Mikan is jammed, his number's like jammed on this banner with like five other guys. But then when it comes to counting the championships, they want to count them all the same. Those championships, it should be LA Lakers won this many championships, Minneapolis Lakers won this many championships, and Boston Celtics have their 17. So it really only the LA Lakers ones should be counted in this argument.
Right. The other thing is, Jim, I got to tell you, I've said it to you before, I'll say it again. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you can sit next to Mavs. That guy is the George Costanza of Boston sports. And for what happened? What did he show up to the Patriot Stadium one day wearing his kid's little footy pajamas and Brady wouldn't sign him, his autograph one day? What is his major malfunction when he said about Brady calling out rookie receivers? That's BS. Brady never did that in a press conference or anything like that. That is such BS when he comes up with stuff like that.
Bill, thanks for the call. He's a very nice man.
Yeah, Mass is great.
And if you
mean, and he was right. He did call out the tight ends.
Yeah, and yeah, he wasn't very complimentary of the suck weapons that he had last year.
But he was
year,
right.
I think rightfully so.
He was right. That was the thing.
I think what we're seeing right now with Cam Newton is nothing more than new guy-itis.
So
you know,
I have to ask you this, and I know you know we're bumping up against it here. But the way you brought this up, I almost feel like you have done this at a job, like in the beginning, been like, you know, big, nice Jim Murray.
Yeah, I mean, that's of course. Everyone does this, Chris. You've done it, too. When you're the new guy in the office, hey, nice to meet you. Oh, no, big fan. That show's great. No, listen, last night. Oh, no, that was a real funny bit you guys did. Meanwhile, I'm like, hate listening to their show. Like, oh, God, yeah, awful. Everyone does it. You always say nice complimentary things to your coworkers because you want to be on the up and up. You know, you want everything nice. Talk to me in 5 weeks. Talk to me after the game that they go to Kansas City and get it pushed in, and N'Keal Harry is running out of bounds. Cam Newton is throwing him a ball, clangs off his frying pan hands. Talk to me then. Let's see what Cam Newton is saying about N'Keal Harry after about 4 or 5 weeks. Can we? Because right now, it feels contrived and a little bit premature. Oh, no, he's great. Oh, no, sure, the fumble wasn't that great, but no. He'll get it. He's a young player. We're going to bring him along. I remember having to deal with this with Kelvin Benjamin. You never want to be in the same sentence with fat-ass Kelvin Benjamin.
Hey, Kelvin Benjamin caught a national championship touchdown pass for Florida State. That guy's a legend.
What a stiff.
You cannot talk about him that way.
Yeah, and you know, body type-wise, who N'Keal Harry kind of reminds me of?
Who?
Kelvin Benjamin.
Oh, that's not good, though.
It's not at all. So, yeah, talk to me about a month and a half, and let's see what Cam Newton has to say then. But everyone does that, Chris. Male, female, whatever. When you show up in the office, you're the new employee.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That was a really funny joke you told at lunch. That was great. We should grab drinks sometime. You're the best. Oh, that show. Oh, man, your show. Your bits are so good. Oh, I love listening to that show. Yeah, then a month later, you're like, oh, I hate everyone here. This is just, oh, it's hell. Absolute hell. What have I done? I've made a terrible decision. With that, let's get to 5 questions for Chris Gass. We're getting nothing to do with sports.
I got 5 questions for Chris Gasper of Channel 5. I got 5 questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got 5 questions.
5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I got 5 questions. I hope this segment ain't too
we got 5 questions for Chris Gasper at Channel 5. Got nothing to do with sports to wrap up the show here as we get set to make way for Ryan Johnson and Billy Lanning,
yeah,
who are on this afternoon leading you into, it's not COVID, it's just got something in my throat, I promise, leading you into the Revolution, who have a soccer match this afternoon at 4:30.
Looking for that first home win at Gillette of 2020.
I'll take your word for it. Question number one, Chris. Name a struggle today's kids will never know. In other words, what's something that today's Gen Z,
I have one because I just saw PlayStation 5's coming out, and I'm kind of thinking every time a new system comes out, I'm like, maybe I'll get back into video games. The struggle of not being able to get a Nintendo cartridge to play and having to pull it out and blow in it and blow in it and then put it back in and then reset, then flip the top again, pull it out, blow in it again, shake it a little. They'll never have to deal with that.
They'll never have to deal with that. They'll never have to dial a phone, Chris. They'll never have to wait for your sibling to get off the phone.
Using a payphone at the mall?
Yeah, any of that kind of stuff.
Call your parent?
Funny you say about the PlayStation 5 because I got to get me one of them because I'm an overgrown child. What a cluster F with their pre-sales that they tried to do online. Sold out in like 30 seconds. Target, Best Buy, waited up all night. I think it was Wednesday night. I was like, they're going to put them on sale at midnight. I'm going to be ready. They went on sale 5 minutes of midnight. They were gone by midnight. The kid didn't get one. Boy, was I pissed.
Man. Like maybe some enterprising listener will hook you up.
Yeah, right. Question number two, but I'm available. Question number two. Study says, Chris, if you're feeling anxious, you should watch a television show that you watched as a kid. If you were feeling anxious, what would that TV show be for you?
Transformers.
The old cartoon?
Yeah, the old cartoon. Transformers or Voltron?
Oh, I loved Voltron.
I loved Voltron, too. Defenders of the Universe, sorry.
Now, did you...
Yes.
Did you have any of the Voltron toys? Any of that old cast iron stuff?
I did. And I also had I had Mirage the Transformer. He transformed into an Indy car. And let me just say that what he really transformed into was an incredible weapon for breaking toes.
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, my God. Those cast iron toys. If you dropped a cast iron Transformer on your foot, my Lord. Oh.
Now, what I really do remember when you mentioned
kind of pain.
When you mentioned the Transformers and especially Voltron. Spoiled little fat Jimmy, who again had the USS flag, the aircraft carrier from G.I. Joe that literally no one had.
Like but a mythical toy.
Yeah, but I had it here. Also, used to beg my dad to take me to Mr. Big Toyland in Waltham that we used to see the commercials for during the cartoons they would run there in WLVI, Channel 56. Yep. Mr. Big Toyland in Waltham, not close to Melrose. But, Dad, you got to take me. They have the rare Voltrons. Used to go at least one Saturday a month.
Oh, boy.
Question number three. Oh, it was a spoiled childhood. Question number three. When things break, Chris, do you prefer to fix them or replace them?
Oh, fix them. I will spend hours trying to fix
them. Really? You, of all people?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I will spend hours trying to jury-rig something just to get it to... Yeah, no. I will spend a long time trying to fix it.
Oh, once it's broke, it's not my problem. Go buy another one. Question number four. If you could buy a second home somewhere, where would that second home be?
Ooh. Dana Point, California.
Is that outside of L.A.?
Yeah, it's Orange County. It's right next to Laguna.
See, I would go La Jolla. You've been to La Jolla?
I have been to La Jolla. Very nice. George's on the Cove.
You got to have some serious money to live there. But those homes, you get to see the dolphins jumping out of the water around like 5 p.m. Oh, it's just the best stuff, like fantasy land. Final question, Chris. Have you had the new spicy McNuggets from McDonald's?
I have not. I have not had them.
Not as spicy as they should be. Tasty, but the regular nuggets are better. I tried them this week. I was excited for the release of the spicy nuggets. They could be spicier. That's what I will say about those, at the risk of making this sound like a commercial.
Can I ask you one question during the segment? How long does it take you normally to go from glad handing new coworker to I'm putting onions in the ceiling, you SOBs?
Let's see. I got hired. I mean, I worked there off and on. I signed that paperwork at FNX 4 different times, but that turn, 3 years.
Okay, yeah, that's standard.
Yeah. I'm not at onion ceiling here, though. No, things are good here. But I will say in the past, oh, no, I've been glad hand, happy to be here. And within a month and a half, oh, get me out of this place. Everyone here sucks. With that, always good to see you. Chris Gasper of WCVB Channel 5.
Yes,
catch him. What are you on next?
I will be on tomorrow, SportsCenter 5 OT. We'll be wrapping up that Patriots game, hopefully.
I also read them at Channel 5. You've been doing more columns.
You've got
a podcast there now. So.
Yeah, the Take 5 podcast. Check that out.
Always a pleasure, Chris. And for Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, read his Celtics coverage there, bostonsportsjournal.com. Coming up next, Ryan Johnston and Billy Lanny. That's going to do it for us. Talk to you Monday with Felger and Mads. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.